Representative Kennard moves the dash seven amendments to House Bill 3788. Is there any discussion? This is on the motion on the dash sevens, Representative?
No discussion.
Okay, is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Let's call the roll if that's, people prefer that. No objection. No objection?
No objection to the dash seven.
Okay, no objection to the dash sevens. They're adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bates.
I move the dash eight amendments to House Bill 3788.
Representative Bates moves the dash eight amendments to House Bill 3788. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, question?
Representative Crummell.
Would that be, so the dash eight would supersede the dash sevens? Is that what you're saying, Representative?
That is correct, but dash eight includes all of seven as well as the additions for the labor.
There's a couple of changes, I think, in the bill prior to those sections.
That reflects that so that they could be, it won't slow the process down of citing.
Okay. I think we'll do is we'll call the roll on the dash eights. The dash sevens have been adopted. Go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Bates.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Garrard.
Nay.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Canope.
No.
Representative Crummell.
No.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
No. The dash eights fail.
Okay.
Representative Canope.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3788 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman.
With a due pass?
With a due pass recommendation.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to move House Bill 3788 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, do we have a fiscal on the bill?
We have a fiscal on the bill.
I'm checking just to make sure.
I don't believe you're going to find
No.
Mr. Chairman, has any evidence presented to the committee indicating what the cost of the bill would be in terms of a fiscal impact?
We do not have a fiscal at this time, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, did the bill have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means when it came to this committee?
It did not.
Mr. Chairman, wish to protest it being sent to Ways and Means.
Noted. Any other discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker?
Thank you. I had an additional amendment to move, and I'm not being allowed to move that.
Representative, right now we have a motion on the bill. Mm-hmm. We have to deal with this motion first.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Carlson?
I just wanted to make a statement about voting for the against the dash 8 amendments, and I wanted to say, first of all, that I think that there is some good policy contained in Section 21 generally that talks about, especially the first part, that talks about employing local workforces and for the benefit of Oregon. And I think that, as you mentioned earlier, that some of these details could be worked out on the Senate side. I think if a general policy statement were put in there without the level of detail that's put in here, that actually it would, that might be a good addition to the bill. But I wasn't in favor of adding the additional line-by-line detail about how that ought to roll out.
Sure, thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? I would, Representative Devlin, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, move to adjourn.
We have a motion before us, Representative. Any other discussion? I would simply point out that House Bill 3788, even though we've kind of gotten into some disagreement relative to the dash sevens and the dash eights, I'd point out that it's a very significant piece of legislation, I think, for the state of Oregon. And I think it addresses a very critical and important concern relative to making sure Oregonians have sufficient power online available as we move into the future. And I would recognize certainly all the work that was put on by many, many people into this bill, as well as Senate Bill 843, including the support from the governor's office, the Department of Energy, all the folks from the private sector and the public sector who worked together, and of course the senators that worked on this bill at all as well. So I think this is a good bill that's going to be important to our state as we move forward.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to appeal your denial of Representative Devlin's motion to adjourn. It is a motion that takes precedence.
Yeah, I was just informed of that, Representative. So before we can vote on the motion to refer House Bill 3788 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a DuPass recommendation, we will first have to vote on Representative Devlin's motion to adjourn because it does take priority. Thank you. Let's go ahead and call the roll on Representative Devlin's motion unless there's any discussion on the motion.
There's not a discussion.
Non-debatable. Go ahead. Call the roll.
Representative Bates.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Garrard.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Canope.
No.
Representative Crummell.
No.
Representative Monas Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
No. Motion to adjourn fails. Representative Canope, do you want to make your motion again?
Mr. Chair, I moved House Bill 3788 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a DuPass recommendation.
Thank you. Any other discussion? If not, please call.
Well,
Representative
yes.
Walker?
Let's see, what else can I do? I think I'd like to. I think I'd like to appeal the motion to go to Ways and Means.
Well, we've already had an objection that's been noted, but the motion is to move the bill to Ways and Means. You can vote no, obviously, Representative.
I'll vote no, and I'll appeal the motion.
Okay. Go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Bates.
No.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
It can be downright dangerous. It's in the department of procedure, you know that?
I'm starting to get real.
I think I'm about to get my book out of study.
Technical.
I'm waiting for somebody to follow somebody so we get free throws.
That's right.
What's Richard calling me home?
ET phone
home. Okay, now we'll take a stretch. Somebody wants to tell Richard that Clinton ain't in the White House anymore?
Oh, I lost Representative Johnson.
This is silly.
In 97, they did a thing on the floor before they used parliamentary procedure, something around the 24-hour rule, and I didn't understand it completely. But what it allowed them to do was literally to delay the timing of a bill, and you have to vote within 24 hours or something, or there was a notice thing or whatever, and it killed the bill. So you couldn't vote on it on the floor. It was a real controversial bill. So they used parliamentary procedure, and they couldn't bring it back up. It was against the rules. So.
Thank you for your
okay, we Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I vote aye and serve notice of possible reconsideration of the committee's vote to send the bill to Ways and Means.
Representative Garrard.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
I'm sorry. This is the motion, Chair. Thanks for moving it.
This is the motion. Move it to Ways and Means.
Representative Canope.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Monas Anderson.
Do the same. Vote yes.
Aye.
And serve notice.
And serve notice to change my vote.
I may not be here on Friday. That's why I have to have a committee member that's actually here.
Representative Walker.
Richie?
Oh, I only need two.
Okay. No.
Tell her how to vote, Richard.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Eight aye. One, two, three nay. With
You will be hearing.
Two serving members of potential reconsideration, possible reconsideration.
That means Bill comes back on Friday.
Expect a late meeting.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I could confer with the chair for 30 seconds.
Maybe. Don't drop the gavel.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
It's not over.
Feels more like pants than anything else. I don't think I'm too tired.
So you are, man.
Hey, Jerry.
It's not a bad idea.
Close it over time for me.
Jerry.
Joanne Bowman.
Let me check her.
I think they're asking for your baseball bill to come back.
Scaled back version.
We're just warming up.
Right.
Hum, babe.
Nothing in the committee.
Just says, but it does not address the reconsideration.
Okay. Representative Canoe.
Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, I serve notice of possible reconsideration.
Representative Canoe.
Mr. Chair, I move for immediate reconsideration of House Bill 3788.
And the motion to?
To reconsider the bill.
Okay. Okay. Representative Canoe has moved for immediate reconsideration on House Bill 3788. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Devlin.
Objection.
Okay. No.
Also to note for the record that I had inquired with the chief clerk who said that this would keep this in committee until Friday for reconsideration. However, I had not given her all the details of possible motions, but I will probably ask her to rule on whether this motion was proper at this time.
Okay. We are... Of course, you didn't ask her about if another motion of another member who voted on the prevailing side moved for immediate reconsideration.
I did not ask her that.
Okay.
The chief clerk can be here in a few minutes before we can do myself.
I can ask her your question.
No, let me guess. Put her on speakerphone. It's all here.
Speakerphone. So we don't have video teleconferencing here. We could just be very.
Everybody has to
be part of it. I'm glad everybody does look good here. That's a lot different from that.
Well, I was feeling Gerard. I remember in 1997 when he did that thing for the 24-hour rule.
In
Do a reconsideration one time.
And Bill came up at committee, even though they were voted out.
time on the floor, right at the tail end, there was some part of the Rubio bill, and Kitty got the whole Democratic side, there was some parliamentary procedure, and it passed the 24-hour mark, and it was dead, and they couldn't talk about it.
Right, right.
What was the measure?
I can't remember if that one was the most infamous from this session. There was a measure on the floor in 97, which it was the
Okay, all right, yeah.
And reaction at the same time. They didn't realize that it only took a majority of those present on the floor to substitute a minority report, not the majority of the House. So there were two members or one member short.
Well, you can try.
So minority report passed.
Get your vote, then we're not gonna give them that.
That they tried to get through.
Or that's good.
Right, I know.
Draw your motion.
Yeah, everybody was...
Representative Canup?
Mr. Chair, I'm gonna withdraw my motion.
Representative Canup withdraws his motion. So the bill, passes, it goes to Ways and Means with a, as amended, with a due pass recommendation, and the bill will stay in committee until our next committee meeting. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3788, and open a public hearing on House Bill 3790.
You better not.
You want to call stuff to stand? Want to give us 3790?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3790. Committee members, you should have, in your packets on Monday, when the staff measure summary was first handed out, you should have had House Bill 3790-1. In fact, today in your packets, hopefully in all your packets, is the staff measure summary with House Bill 3790-3 amendment attached to it. It authorizes an Oregon city or county to apply to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department for creation of an energy enterprise zone, establishes application approval and notification process, directs the ECD to certify proposed projects for exemption of property tax for operating electrical energy generating facilities within the energy enterprise zone for up to 3 years. In fact, the Dash 3 amendment does materially change the prohibition with regard to local governments. We also have a Dash 5 amendment that once testimony is over, we can in fact discuss. With that, it has it may have a revenue impact, and it has a minimal fiscal impact, for which I have a statement.
There's no no referral to Ways and Means?
No referral.
Okay. Who do we have to testify? Do you have them?
We have a Dash 5, did you say?
Mm-hmm. We have all this kinds of dashes.
Correct.
Dash 7.
Yeah.
We have a Dash 7.
That's what, the one we want, right?
Right.
That's what?
That's the one that put the 3 and the 5 together.
Oh, okay. It supersedes. Okay.
Supersedes the 3 and the 5.
We have our, who signed up for testimony on this, Dan? Do you have the sheet?
Is that using the Dash 3?
Using the Dash 7.
Dash 7. So I don't need to look at the Dash 3.
That's okay with the...
Oh, I don't know.
She missed my journey when you're poor. Don't push the chair.
It means we have to go till 9 o'clock on Friday. I don't support a journey right now.
Move to recess to Magoo.
That's all right.
You want to do it now or later?
Tom.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3790 was originally part of the whole package on 3788, and I'm glad it's now in 3790. It's split out because the emergency clause, you can't have an emergency clause in revenue measures in the same bill. You can't have an emergency clause on a bill with revenue measures in it, so they split the revenue measures out. They're in the discussion on what it would take to speed up and facilitate siting, two additional issues came up that were revenue measures. The first one was an amendment to an enterprise zone, which is a fairly complicated process brought by the sponsor of the enterprise zone and an application to the EDD, and it takes a while to draft the amendment. The discussion was, can we move forward that process of getting an amendment? In the original dash ones, there was an attempt by Senator Lee Beyer to do a three-year property tax exemption in a almost a new kind of enterprise zone. And in consultation with Dennis Doherty, who's been here in front of you on this particular measure, in the counties and with the cities, and especially with economic development, we came up with a way to amend the existing enterprise zones today that eliminates the necessity for creating a third kind of enterprise zone. And I'll let Mike Britton talk about the enterprise zone piece and the cities and so on make their comments on it. But that's the first half of 3790. It allows an energy facility siting, an energy generating facility, to become a part of an enterprise zone with the same restrictions that are in an enterprise zone, that it has to be sponsored by the jurisdiction in which it's located. And it simply eliminates two pieces of the enterprise zones. You don't have to do the amendment. You don't have to get amended into an enterprise zone. It's an automatic enterprise zone. And the certification process is slightly different. You have to be able to show the Department of Economic Development that there is a need for energy in the region. So if there's no need for energy in the region, then you wouldn't have the enterprise, they wouldn't grant the enterprise zone amendment or the enterprise zone power of this statute to the local government that requested it. It keeps local government in control of the process, because local government, like now on an enterprise zone, has to be the sponsor or the initiating party in the enterprise zone. The second half of the amendment, which starts on page 8 and is section 10, 9, 10, and 11, is one of the more difficult things to do in this body. It is a prohibition on a local government ability to tax something. And in all of my years here, I understand that those are almost never done, that you would go in and limit a jurisdiction. The issue here is really not an attempt to take away the power of the local government, although that's exactly what it does. The issue here is to say that if a jurisdiction were to levy a tax on the energy output of the power plant, and that power plant is in competition with all the other power plants, it can't pass on that tax. And it simply then finds itself in the position of having to eat that tax. If it were passed on an existing facility that were already in place, and if it had a contract with an in-state facility, perhaps then the other citizens outside of the region would pay the tax. But this is a local tax on a regional national commodity. And the thing here is, when this arose in Umatilla County, when the discussion arose in Umatilla County, the plant that was in the process of siting immediately said, if you are going to pass this tax, we will have to find another place to site. And that discussion is going on with the local jurisdiction out there, and Dennis Doherty has testified on that. So this bill has the two pieces to it. In the prohibition on local taxing of output, the cities have worked out amendments which are included in the dash sevens, and the municipalities have worked out amendments that protect the ability of the local jurisdiction to do franchise fees or fees in lieu of franchise fees. So you can tax the consumer of the energy in your jurisdiction. That tax is in the statutes now, and it's perfectly legal under this. What you can't do is put, in essence, a sales tax that would be exported to everybody that buys the fuel or the power. The local government can't do that. If the state was going to do that in a statewide sales tax or something like that, the state could do it. It's just the local government that can't. So I'll end my discussions of 3790 there and let economic development talk about the first piece of the amendments, and then the cities talk about the second.
Good, Mike.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I applaud your endurance. I have a few short remarks to make. I listed myself as neutral on the bill, which is generally true. There are other people proposing the bill. We definitely prefer the approach with a variation on the enterprise zone theme, as distinct from a totally new program that gets us into something completely different. To that end, we are not neutral on this. We like this much better than than the old energy generation zone. I have two clarifications. One I would offer, and one is a question I would ask. The first one refers to, I'm looking at the dash 7 amendment, line 21 through 23, section 5. And the clarification I would offer is there are already energy generating facilities in enterprise zones. I'm aware of two. This is meant as a clarification because subsections 1 and 2 are not clear that energy generating facilities are eligible. It's not meant to suggest that those existing zones or those existing exemptions are invalid. The intent of the proposers is to specify that energy generating facilities are eligible. The second clarification is a question I would ask. It's on the previous page, line 25, talks about the region. Mr. Gallagher just spoke about the region. Because the Economic Development Department has to find that there's a need for increases in energy generation capacity, we would ask what is meant by the region. This is not a question we were able to pose before the hearing, but we had plenty of time sitting in the back of the room to think about the bill and are asking that question of what do we mean by a region for the sake of future administration of this should it become law. And finally, I'd have an observation based on the lengthy conversation you had related to the construction phase of these facilities. In this program, the department has already gone to the point of requiring a residential preference, and that requirement by the department was found to be unconstitutional, so we withdrew it. We came up with an alternative solution which has been accepted by the courts, and that is to require a first source agreement. A first source agreement is in the enterprise zone statute and applies to the firms operating the facility, but basically it says if you're going to hire people, you need to go to the local employment provider, and there's a list that's been developed by the employment department, and you need to offer the jobs through that provider. You don't have to hire people there, but you have to make them available, and presumably you'll take a look at those folks that they send you when you make your hiring decision. That's not meant to apply to construction for some of the reasons you heard in the early testimony, but it could if you wanted it to. You know, you'd have to get into the question about private projects by private contractors with private capital and decide whether or not you want to go there. But in terms of the operation of the facility, that question has been addressed in the statute. That's where I'd end my comments. I'm available for questions at the end of other comments.
Okay, thank you. Andrea?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. First of all, I'd like to say that the League supports the concepts in House Bill 3788. The amendments I recognize were on House Bill 3790. I'm just talking in general because this really is a package, although the tax provisions have been separated out. 3788, I know that you've just amended it, but really barring that discussion, in terms of the expedited siting and also the conservation, very important concepts right now. And so in those efforts, before the tax pieces were separated out, the League recognizes that we're trying to find language to fix some of these concerns that we have. Now that the tax piece has been separated out, though, we have those concerns, and we are not supporting the tax piece of the energy package. Really, it's important to look at a few things. It's very important for the local jurisdiction to maintain the ability to manage what types of facilities are in their communities and make sure there's a benefit to those communities. It's also the intent, I know, of House Bill 3788, at least, to maintain the local land use procedures. Those are both important concepts that carry over throughout this package. When we're talking specifically about the tax pieces in House Bill 3790, it is our understanding that, one, the property tax exemption piece is permissive. That's important, of course, for local governments and managing those facilities within their communities. And also, it's important that the property tax exemption apply to facilities that are the larger facilities. We're not talking about some of the things that have been talked about in the short-term siting bills, the two-year, 24-month facilities, because as you know, the property tax exemption would be 3 years, and so it's important that the long-term facilities are the facilities that are getting that property tax exemption. So in terms of the property tax exemption language, we think that it is an important tool that some communities may choose to use in terms of deciding some of those facilities. However, we don't think that it's going to be really the make or break decision for a facility to locate in a community, but could be an important tool for some communities. So that provision in particular, we've worked on and understand that the latest language is concerning enterprise zones. And we have had the chance to briefly look at that language, and our first glance is that language, again, is permissive and could be a tool for local government. However, it's the second provision that very much concerns us, and I know that you've heard from the commissioner from Umatilla County. Basically, the provision, we think there are some dangers or some really some difficulties in drafting language for a situation that currently does not exist. We know Umatilla County has talked about some sort of taxing of export of energy, but not even sure what they were going to look at. The plan was just developing really when the concept was spread across the papers and came to your attention. And we're concerned that the language, because the situation doesn't exist, may have unintended consequences, particularly an environment that is still playing out in terms of what restructuring regulation versus the restructuring. And so we know that an attempt was made to draft that language carefully. However, without this amendment, that language really impacts city's franchise fee authority in the sense that a fix that was part of Senate Bill 1149, which you're all familiar with, that talks about in the new restructured environment, cities being able to calculate their franchise fee on a volumetric method rather than gross revenues as they currently do. So what we've tried to do and with this Dash 7 amendment is propose language that protects that franchise fee authority. So we've tried to really make it as good as we can make it. But again, we still have considerable concerns with the tax pieces of this package.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Miles Anderson.
Thank you. Andy, I just want to make sure this is all in, listed in Section 10 then of the Dash 7 amendments. And I'm pretty sure I'm reading that it makes sure that the city still retains its authority to have control over franchise fees or to retain franchise fees. I think that's in line 24. But where my question is I'm can you explain again that a city, county, district, or they may not levy or collect any tax fee when you're talking about this volume of fuel? I'm still not sure I understand that concept.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mona Sanderson, are you? Could you give me a?
Okay, on page eight. Okay. I don't have my glasses on. Mm-hmm. It's late. Page eight, and it's in A and B where you're talking about under Section 10 on line. Well, basically from 13 to 19.
Right. Actually, 13 to 19 is what we hope fixes some of that, because what we've had to do is really separate the volume language that Mr. Gallagher is trying to insert from the volume provision in Senate Bill 1149, which is a big part of how cities may calculate their franchise fees under Senate Bill 1149. And so that was part of the problem in drafting language, because both pieces of language speak to volume.
Representative Miles Anderson, you want to add to that? Yes, I do. Mr. Chair, Representative Miles Anderson, if you look at line 14 on Section 10A, you see that it's the volume of electric energy produced by the facility. And in the franchise fee, it's the volume consumed as measured, and it translates in that language, which the city's worked on in a Herculean effort 2 years ago. And I think is also protected in the language under 29C, I think, on line 29. That's the reference to the franchise language. Because I understand where Andrew's coming from here, if there turns out to be some sort of an unintended consequence on this, my client and I are not term limited, and we will be back here to fix this. It's not our intent in any way, shape, or form to interfere with municipal fees.
Thank you.
Is there a problem?
Thank you, Andrew. I just had a question on the prior part of your testimony where you were talking about the property tax exemption and the permissive language. Where is this in the current amendment, or were you talking about a prior amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, it is in the dash 7 amendment to House Bill 3790.
What page and what line?
It is basically the entire amendment.
Page
2, line 31. Oh, I'm sorry. Are you asking about the permissive piece for local government?
Right. And may file an application for designation.
That is page 2, line 31.
Right. And is the part that you were expressing concern about just the shall be exempt from ad valorem property tax? I mean, are you concerned about the property tax exemption generally, or I was trying to understand.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the property tax exemption piece is voluntary right now and could be a good tool for local government. We're not sure how many would take advantage of it, but our concern mostly lies with the second tax provision,
Section 10,
which is on page
eight.
That's where the majority of our concerns lie.
So you're not concerned about the first part, you're concerned about the second part?
Primarily, yes. And I would say, too, that, you know, earlier in testimony, we heard that, you know, we've been talking in hypotheticals tonight, but we would also be concerned if, in fact, this piece of legislation was adopted and, something happened with Senate Bill 1149, because I think you very well could have a situation where you're giving a property tax exemption to, a facility that's not selling energy within the state of Oregon. And you can't control where that energy is sold. But, you know, that's a concern.
Andrea, I don't quite understand that comment. What relevance does that have to do with Senate Bill 1149?
Mr. Chair, if Senate Bill 1149 would be either delayed, then you would have a situation where your, say, your customers that would probably buy from some of these folks that would be coming in to build these facilities buy in terms of direct access. They wouldn't have the ability to do that.
Right, but they could sell to Oregon utilities.
Yes.
Or sell to Oregon customers. So
yes, they could. But earlier we were talking in terms of selling with these contracts to some of the big utility or big industrial customers.
Yeah, I don't know if that necessarily applies, though. I mean, the question is, does it go to Oregonians? And to a certain extent it will, to a certain extent it won't. Representative Bates?
I think you may have answered my question, Mr. Chair, but I want to make sure. Mr. Gallagher, you gave a really good answer to a question I asked earlier about the tax situation, that you delay taxes. You only won't get any taxes 3 years after that. You start picking up taxes. Now, that's the properties part of it, and I would understand that under this, these companies would be exempt, I assume, 3 years again, and just like any other enterprise zone. And after that, the county would be picking up taxes at that point. That's one answer. Now, the second piece, though, that I'm not as familiar with is the volume tax you're talking about, the franchise fee. Is that a three-year limit also under this bill? Or could we be in a position where that under this bill, inside an enterprise zone, there might be a permanent loss of that, while a power plant not enterprise zone would be paying a franchise fee? Can that kind of scenario happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, the Section 10 intends to apply to any local government tax on any energy facility, whether it's in or without of an enterprise zone. So you wouldn't have a situation in which one was taxed and one wasn't taxed. And I believe we've been looking at this language quite recently. I believe there's also language in there that says if a tax is levied uniformly on all businesses, you could levy the tax on the energy facility. So if there were a business, a BAT tax, as the Revenue Committee is considering, the language in Section 10 would allow that. And if I can pull it out here for you. I hope it's in this one because it was in the others. I think I'm talking about, and forgive me if I get this wrong, line 18 on page 8, except when the city, county, or political district levies or imposes generally on a non-discriminatory basis throughout the jurisdiction or taxing authority an otherwise lawful tax. So if the local jurisdiction were to levy, say, a sales tax, a local sales tax, that local sales tax could be levied on a non-discriminatory basis. It would then include this generating facility. So we are attempting to prescribe a single tax only on a generating facility. Equivalent of that is like a local food and beverage tax. Mr. Chair, if I may, there's one other piece that's not in here, and that's why Asena Squires is here with us. We've had discussion about special districts.
Can you give her testimony for her?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll let Ms. Squires give her own testimony.
Go ahead, Asena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Asena Squires, and I'm here this evening, not today, this evening, on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon.
9:10 p.m., Ms. Squires.
Yeah, thank you. 9:10 p.m., thank you, Representative Walker. This the Enterprise Zone program, as it currently exists, is something that cities and counties have the option to choose to participate in. They choose to create the zone. A special district does not have that choice. The special district, if the city or county, if the district provides service to a city or county or within an enterprise zone, those property taxes are, those taxes, personal property taxes, are exempt from taxation. We don't have a seat at the table. We don't have veto authority. The city and county simply chooses to create an enterprise zone, and we go along for the ride. I've been in front of this committee before on this very issue, and so while it may be voluntary for cities and counties to choose to have their taxes preempted, it is not for special districts. And so I've had discussions with Mr. Gallagher about some sort of mechanism to try to accomplish maybe what might be somewhat of a compromise. I did have an amendment into LC to allow property taxes to continue to be levied within an enterprise zone for a special service district, but I think the proponents of the legislation do not want that amendment, and I understand that this bill is on the fast track, and so Tom and I appear before you today to sort of compromise. I know, amazing. And so what we've sort of come up with is a plan to insert language when the bill is on the Senate side to not exempt property taxes for special districts, but instead to allow special districts to insert some language in that would create within the criteria for Economic Development Department to develop for the approval of these enterprise zones, to include the ability of special districts to negotiate upfront potential costs that may exist for infrastructure type of service districts, water district, a sewer district, a fire district. For instance, if one of these energy e-zones went in Umatilla Rural Fire Protection District, very small fire district, not as well-equipped as Pendleton Fire District, which happens to be a city fire department. Pendleton Fire District, if they needed to, would be able to be at the table and negotiate with the energy facilities and say, look, we've got 10 volunteer firefighters, we have a truck that we don't have enough hose to drag out and to fight a fire that might exist, or a water service district that might be providing the water service for the city, or a sewer district that might be providing those types of essential types of services for a city, and there are a number of them, particularly in the rural areas. And so that's our plan, and we're just here to get that on the record, that's the intention to do that on the Senate side.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. you shared the example of a very small fire district, Umatilla. Talk about the role that ports would play in the scenario that you just spelled out. They're a special district. Not all ports are impoverished, like the Umatilla Fire District.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the ports would not play any role in this type of a scenario. We're really only talking about, and I use this term loosely, it's really not defined in statute, but those sort of infrastructure essential types of services. So we're not talking about parks and recreation districts. Gosh, I hope none of them are listening to me on the internet because they'll just kill me for calling them non-essential, but we're really talking about...
Do you want to say that against the record clearly and slowly?
It's time to quit digging. You're in far enough.
Representative Witt, perhaps I should have let Mom give them to us. I think you get the point.
Thank you for that important clarification.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Crummell?
Thank you. Ms. Squires, isn't it true that water districts, sewer districts, you know, those types of services are really an enterprise service, and therefore you have a rate base?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, many water and sewer districts have permanent property taxing authority. So they do levy property taxes in addition to their fees that they would charge. So property tax exemption would hit those two types of districts also.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Two things that I'm wondering, and that is, one, now I can't find it, is that if you could do a in lieu of, page 8, line 25 and 26, where it talks about, and it, I guess it's only for electric utilities, but maybe if you insert it in there, the special districts for in lieu of taxes. So in other words, on the rate, because there wouldn't be a tax base payment, that potentially you could negotiate a little bit higher rate on the services that they're being provided. And not only would you have the enterprise services such as water, sewer, and that sort of thing, but if you could also include the fire districts in that kind of a situation, so that basically they, as opposed to a property tax, they paid whether it be an annualized rate or a monthly rate or however you worked it out, but that would give, in giving the service districts a little bit of flexibility, but also the developer or the builder of the generation plant the ability to negotiate those things, so that you don't end up with costs that are too high and start pushing the cost of power up. Just a suggestion.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Yes. Representative Monis Anderson?
I just want to clarify, right now, do the cities collect a metric volume tax? And then, well, answer that, and then I don't need to ask.
Mr. Representative Monis Anderson, right now they do not, because that is a provision that's in Senate Bill 1149. That is an alternative method they may choose so that cities are held whole in terms of collecting franchise fees, because there are some differences in the way that they collect those fees now on a gross revenue system and how they would collect them if Senate Bill 1149 is implemented. So not at this time.
And it's not something cities want to have then, the ability to do?
Yes. It is very much so. They need to have that ability. Otherwise, under Senate Bill 1149, or after it's implemented, there are cities that would lose franchise fee revenue if they could not collect it on the volumetric approach, with the volumetric approach.
Well, it just seems to me that this line 12 on page 8, it says, basically a city, et cetera, may not levy or collect from an energy facility any tax license fee. May not, and that.
But there's an order.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mona Sanderson, that's exactly what we've tried to make a distinction and fix with the
with
language
the,
that's further down in the
okay,
section.
Okay, if you say it,
but, you know, that's exactly our concern because, again, we're addressing a hypothetical situation, and it's difficult to make the distinction in the language. I mean, we still are very concerned about that, but we've tried to get it to a place where at least our attorneys say, I'm not sure what a judge would think, but, you know, you'd have a better shot.
Okay. All right, thank you. Doug, did you want to give some testimony? I understand it was going to be 5 seconds or less. We'll be permissive, Doug. We'll allow you 20 seconds.
19, 18. Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Riggs, here again representing the building trades.
Let's give attention, please.
IBW, the Niki contractors, et cetera. At the risk of further tarnishing my already damaged reputation with the chair and with the members of the committee, let me make two quick points. First of all, on this bill, I'd refer you back to the one pager I handed out on the earlier bill. This is potentially a far larger benefit than that contained in 3788, and therefore we believe that there's even more of a reason to include community protections, worker protections in this type of legislation. And we were working on an amendment. The Ledge Council obviously was overburdened, and so the opportunity was not there to get it completed. However, I do note in reading through the dash sevens that I see here today that a change has been made in the previous approach, which was create an energy zone, and this bases the tax zone more on an enterprise zone. And there is some language in the Enterprise Zone Act, which I think that we could probably work with the committee before it gets to the Senate and try to adopt some of the same community preference, local hire type of provisions. And I reference page 2, and I'd have to go back and read the Enterprise Zone Act. I haven't done it in 2 years. But the very top of line two, page 2, line 4, talks about first source hiring agreements, and pre-certified business firm on line 12 means an eligible business firm, et cetera. And I think there are avenues that we could probably reach some agreement on between the time that this bill passes out and moves to the Senate. And so I would propose that if it would be okay with the committee and with some of the members in this room, that we sit down together and try to work out some compromise language on this bill that we all could accept. We do feel very strongly, and I'll take a look at this at some point, but we do feel very strongly that the incentives provided in this bill are stronger and probably more effective at bringing companies into the state than the ones provided under the last bill. So we certainly would be willing to work with the committee to see if we can reach an agreement.
Doug, how about the fact that any businesses that come in under an enterprise zone with the permission of local government, they get the exemption of these taxes? So should we start applying the standard to every business that gets the exemption on the taxes based upon local government approval?
Well, I think there's a difference between, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think there's a difference between the types of large companies that we're talking about coming in at this point, which we believe have a bit of a track record, and the smaller companies which might come in under an enterprise zone. Again, I need to go back and read the enterprise statute. This is the first that I've seen that was changed, was made from an energy zone to enterprise statute. You may have a good point, and there may be language in here that I have not yet looked at that may meet some of our concerns.
I would point out that Roseburg, I think it was Roseburg Lumber, just took advantage of a property tax exemption and a significant exemption on income taxes from our enterprise zone statutes, and it didn't commit them to any kind of a prevailing wage statutory or other requirement.
Mr. Chairman,
that's a pretty big company.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as I said, I think it's worth possibly a work group sitting down between now and the time this gets to the floor or gets to the Senate and seeing if there's some agreement that we can reach. And I think that there might be an opportunity to reach agreement on some common points that most of the committee, if not all the committee, could agree with, as well as the building trades.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If first source hiring agreement and the language that you're seeking is actually already in the statute, though, is it necessary to be reiterated again in the, I mean, Mike testified earlier that it's already in the statute. I'm just wondering if it's really going to be necessary to reiterate it somewhere else in the statute, or if once is enough.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, as I said, I haven't had a chance to read it. It's been since the very last session that I even looked at this. This is the first that I saw the dash sevens. It may very well be that the enterprise zone statute would meet some of our concerns. As a result, we'd like to go back and take a look at it. Obviously, at 9:26 p.m., it's difficult to do, but we would be happy to work with you and with the state as well.
Did you want to add something? Maybe you could.
I would just comment, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would just comment briefly that the first source agreement requirement is already in the enterprise zone statute. It's existing statute. I can give you the site if you'd like. It applies to employees of the firms that receive the benefit. It does not yet apply to the construction related to that, and I believe that's
right. They have to pay a certain standard based. That's right. That's in the, that is in there in the enterprise zone statute.
Mr. Chairman,
to the people that get hired.
Right. Right. Although I do know, Mr. Chairman, that the first paragraph says a first source hiring agreement with publicly funded job training provider for a period of property tax exemption. There may already be workers who are trained and higher up in the pecking order in various trades that might not be covered by this. That's something I'd want to explore.
Okay. Representative Walker, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chair, but I don't need to ask it anymore. Thank
okay,
you.
Representative Devlin?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the representative from Economic Development, when you were trying to say that it would apply to the workers for particularly, let's say, it's an energy facility, those would be the, you believe it would apply to the workers that are working after the facility is built. It might not apply to the construction workers that are building the facility. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, that is the intent of the current law.
I don't think the standard is the same, though.
Right.
I think it's a different standard. It's not the standard that Doug's proposing. Go ahead, Representative.
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Anybody else would like to give testimony? If not, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3790, open a work session, House Bill 3790. Representative Canope?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 3790.
Representative Canope moves the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 3790. Is there any objection? Any discussion? Okay, so ordered. Representative Canope?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3790 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Knapp moves House Bill 3790 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
At 9:30, there better not be.
Okay, no discussion. Representative Walker has ordered that there shall be no discussion. We always take those orders seriously. Please call the roll.
Representative Bates.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
No, Mr. Chairman, and serve notice of possible minority report to deal with the issues subject relative, particularly to the workers that would be working on the construction relative to these facilities.
So noted.
Representative Garrard.
Aye.
Representative Johnson. Sorry. Representative Canope.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
No, and serve notes of possible minority report.
Representative Witt.
Aye. House Bill 3790 goes to the floor with a, as amended, with a due pass recommendation. Close that work session. Anything else for the committee tonight?
Now let's go home.
Okay, well, let's call it a night. We have, I guess now that we have 8:43 and 3788 back Friday, do you have to add both of those to our schedule on Friday?
Oh,
okay, do that right away.
We'll
have both those back Friday plus whatever was on the agenda Friday, so we may be here for a while Friday.
Mr. Chairman, someone left their keys.
Keys are here, so. Okay.
If I can figure out what car they unlocked.
Representative Walker is buying drinks, and we are.
What a fun day.
Hey,
you ever been to Magoo's?
Nope, never been there.
You know, you have to
call the upstairs out of my.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
there was a